You're listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded in studio and live at Advertising Week's global events, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technologies industries each and every week. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and maybe even leave a positive review. Thanks for listening. Alex, thanks for being on the AW360 podcast today. I'm so pleased to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you're CEO and founder of Proxima AI. Tell us what you do at Proxima AI.
Happy to. Proxima AI is a data intelligence platform. We've built a proprietary network of over 12,000 brand connections and over 65 million unique shopper personas. We're providing insights and improved performance across the full life cycle of marketing to a consumer.
I think the first question on my mind, and probably that of anybody listening at the moment, because AI is a hot topic, where does the AI come in Proxima AI?
Sure thing. So as we think about AI and the future of AI, we see that more and more there will be winners in the large language model race, where we'll be purchasing those technologies off the shelf, similar to how we purchase technologies like cloud storage today. It's not to say that they're all created equal, but there will be a competitive enough environment that you don't want to necessarily try to build all of that technology yourself when it's something that you can buy. So really our differentiated approach is the fact that we have such a unique and proprietary data set that we can teach these large language models that we are quote unquote purchasing to perform better for us, especially when it comes to decisions and insights around marketing for today's consumer. And I think that's a really important distinction because in the post iOS 14 world, we know that data has become harder to come by, especially when it comes to tracking what happens within the Apple ecosystem. And those changes will naturally continue to get more and more stringent. We talk about how third-party cookies are going to be gone within the next year or so. And that ultimately makes these proprietary data sets that are not dependent on those types of tracking, that type of tracking information, even more relevant and more powerful. And ultimately, that's how we believe we're going to provide very differentiated value to our clients for the long term.
One of the things I'm very curious about, especially with iOS 14 and, you know, the ever-present pending loss of the cookie, is how do these things work? You know, walk me through it as, you know, say I'm a retailer, you know, representing a brand and I want to sell something. What does it look like now versus just a couple years ago?
Yeah, great question. So today, over 60% of consumers on Apple devices are opting out of being tracked. What that means is after the initial click on, let's say, an Instagram ad, you will get redirected to a website and whatever happens, whether you add to cart, whether you purchase, it is not known by the ad platform if you opt out. Previously, with the IDFA, the device, the mobile device identifier, you'd be able to understand what actually happened beyond the click so that you get full attribution all the way to the purchase. And that's the real difference that's happened in the post iOS 14 world. You just don't know with high degree of certainty who actually purchased and who didn't, which is why targeting has become much harder to come by. It also means that attribution is more difficult, as well as getting your right ad in front of the right person consistently. Now, Meta and TikTok and Google, they're all doing amazing things to try to improve the predictability of that targeting. But the truth is, in the world of advertising where you're trying to put ideas around purchases or around consumption in front of somebody that currently isn't thinking about your product, finding the right person at the right moment is super important. And that really is our differentiated advantage because of all the transactional data that we have access to, again, all aggregated all anonymized, never shared outside of our ecosystem, we are able to provide much higher fidelity of signal to then generate the best targeting possible.
And let's say I'm a brand. Where would you direct me in terms of where to put my priorities? I mean, we've seen, you know, a lot of brands kind of shifting priorities over the past few years, and it feels like, to a degree, they're a little lacking in direction at times. What do you think is the best path forward for a brand that is looking to both drive their product and brand awareness, but also compensate for the lack of, you know, this tracking that they've been used to for so long?
Yeah, really, really good question. In the post iOS 14 world, attribution has become harder and harder. And most brands, especially in growth stages, they're running on very tight working capital and cash flow cycles. So the efficiency around that customer acquisition is their lifeblood. I think it's really important that in stage one, every brand needs to make sure they have a strong handle on their unit economics. And that typically means investing in great performance marketing, both on the talent side in terms of people, but also in tools, technology, as well as their conversion funnel. That's going to give you really solid unit economics, bring down your cost of acquisition, increase your conversion rates, and hopefully get you in front of the highest lifetime value customers possible. But in order to really accelerate at scale, you need to also invest in brand marketing. And that's less of the performance-driven, conversion-focused type spending, but also creating awareness, creating credibility, making sure that when people see your ad, as we know, they have to see ads 5, 6, 7 times before they often get to the buying decision. They need to be familiar and comfortable and confident that there is a relationship with that brand mentally that's going to encourage them to want to be a customer. And I think that's a often missed opportunity in recent years, in that people have been so focused on performance marketing. Obviously, the Facebooks and TikToks and Googles of the world had made performance marketing incredibly powerful and lucrative. But that being said, if you don't invest in the brand side at scale, your longer term customer acquisition will start to diminish very quickly, and it will be harder to actually have a sustainable business that's larger in size over time.
You know, one of the things I'm always curious about when it comes to all forms of digital marketing, and I think the evolution of it, is, you know, we had a pretty steady run for quite some time, you know, from the dawn of the internet to mobile to present, with really what I see as being the biggest, I don't want to call it a wall or a, you know, gateway that needed to be, you know, circumvented. But when COVID hit, everything seems to have changed, and a lot of other things within digital marketing changed along with it. What in your mind is the eventual final outcome of that, that marketers will really need to look back and remember that time as, you know, hey, this was a key moment in time and everything changed? Was that just random, you know, bad luck, or was that, were we destined to reach this place anyway?
We were destined to reach it, but I think COVID was definitely an accelerant in terms of digital adoption. I think about my mother, who for the longest time was hesitant to use Amazon because she didn't trust putting her credit card into a web portal. COVID comes, and all of a sudden she doesn't have the option to go to stores, and she's dependent on online delivery. And now she's an avid Amazon user. And those days of not being comfortable purchasing online are completely forgotten. And there's a lot of just kind of purchasing behavior that was accelerated, where people got more and more comfortable buying things off their mobile devices. With Apple Pay, for example, to be able to click a button twice and look at your screen, and suddenly you're buying goods of hundreds of dollars right off your mobile device, maybe looking at one ad and clicking a couple buttons to get to that purchase decision. That was not a reality for so many users before. And that consumer behavior has changed dramatically and has accelerated digital adoption in a really meaningful way. That being said, retail is still the vast majority of total purchase value across the world. But we can see that online is just continuing to increase and increase over time. I would say that when we look back at COVID, it won't be just a moment in time that we say, okay, that changed everything, but it was a meaningful accelerant of roughly 10 to 15 years of digital adoption that ultimately now we're going to see more and more innovation that people are continuously getting more comfortable with because of that time spent really in their mobile devices, living in the digital world when the real world was really not an option.
Let's talk a little bit about retention. One of my favorite quotes that I love to paraphrase and not attribute to anyone because I really have no idea who said this and I'm not exactly sure what the exact quote is, but it was something along the lines of the customer you already have is the least expensive customer to have. When it comes to retention and the importance of it, you would think it would be so much more beneficial for brands, retailers, et cetera, to keep the customers they already have. And yet we see problems with retention throughout the industry all the time. At Proxima, what is, you know, your advice and your method for helping these brands retain their customers?
That's a really great point that you bring up. I think the quote actually even states this idea of an existing customer is five times cheaper to sell to again than a new customer. So there's just a vast improvement and optimization of actually selling into that existing customer versus trying to acquire a new customer. To be clear, you need to do both, right? You still need new customers in order to grow, but maximizing the value that you can get out of your existing customer base has to be the priority because the cost of getting them to purchase again is so much more efficient and therefore gives you so much more growth opportunity as a business. What we do at Proxima is twofold. Number one, we really highlight full lifecycle marketing, which means beyond just acquiring the new customer, how are you treating them? How are you nurturing that relationship? How are you engaging them over time so that they stay your customer and continue to purchase over and over again? We take a data-driven approach. What we're doing is actually looking at not only what that customer is doing in your world within your customer relationship management tool, but also what is that customer doing across our network? Are they buying a lot in the last 14 days in your category? And therefore, should you be treating them better than you realize, right? If you and I purchased the exact same t-shirt a year ago from the same company and haven't purchased anything yet, there would be very limited views on what a company or brand can determine on our likelihood to purchase again. However, because of our data network, we're actually able to say, hey, you know what? Alex is buying a lot more clothing in the last 7 days. Let's send him that really exclusive VIP offer that we can't send out to our entire subscriber list, but we can send to him because he clearly is a high value, high likelihood to purchase consumer in our database already, that we have a direct relationship through email or SMS. I think those are the opportunities that we really highlight and see really strong impact for our customers. And ultimately, the ability to deliver an email or an SMS is so much cheaper than trying to buy ads on paid media platforms. So that has to be where we start. And we really, really advocate for a strong retention strategy to be where someone prioritizes first purchase opportunities over and over again for their new customers and their existing customers.
And last question, and I like to call this the crystal ball. In the coming year, perhaps even two, where do you see the industry going? And, you know, obviously somewhere in there, the cookie finally does go away. So this is kind of a two-part question. What do you see on the horizon? And what do you see in terms of the industry being able to really cope with the cookie when it finally does leave us?
This is a really fun question because I think there's so many people with their own crystal balls all trying to predict this exact issue. Like, our view is ultimately when cookies are gone and the app ecosystem becomes more and more strict from a privacy and tracking perspective, really what you need is the ability to see into the core unique identifiers so that you can see who's doing what when. And when I say core unique identifiers, I mean email and phone number. Because if you think about today, all of your ways of saving or requesting new passwords or authenticating your logins, they're all done through email and phone number, which means you're not going to see those unique identifiers disappear anytime soon. And that is the core way that you can actually know with certainty, are you speaking to, are you engaging with, are you talking to the right person for the right reasons? And that ultimately is where we've been betting is going to have the most value. And that's why we continue to invest in our database and our proprietary network focused on email and phone number being those unique identifiers. And it's going to be choppy, right? Like as the cookies disappear and everyone tries to find new ways to get their messages, get their ads in front of the right people at the right moments, it's going to be difficult. But ultimately, the more that you can have those unique identifiers, as well as that first and second party data, the better off you're going to be for the long term.
If someone wanted to find out more about Proxima AI, where would they go?
They'd start by going to our website, which is just proxima.ai. And ultimately, there's a lot of content there, case studies, a lot of fun information that you can quickly access to better understand our data intelligence platform. And ultimately, we're always excited when viewers or listeners of our podcast partners come in. And if they mention that, we'll be happy to give them a 30-day free trial of our software.
Amazing. Well, Alex, thanks so much for taking the time to do this today. This has been super interesting.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including our flagship podcast, Great Minds. You can find those at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.